This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Cynthia Cherish Mallory and Reverend and DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Wedding Cake on Heritage Radio Network. Before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, that's love spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Wedding Cake, all one word. Heritage_radio and hashtag RevLove. So welcome to the second season of Wedding Cake. For those who might just be listening for the first time, this show is a sweet revenge on my own wedding day years ago when I didn't get to have cake because I eloped in Vegas. So that marriage didn't work out, but I still love weddings. I love DJing them. I love writing the ceremonies and officiating them. I even love coordinating the surprise marriage proposals around New York City. So go to my website, djcherishthelove.com. That's love spelled L-U-V. Reach out to me if you are planning on popping the question. I can coach you, and together we can make it epic. And the best part of this show, every week, we get to eat wedding cake on air. Yum, yum. And because I'm not bitter and I love love, I decided I should have my cake every week and eat it too. So if you need a DJ for your wedding or want me to officiate and write your ceremony, hit me up. And check out previous episodes of Wedding Cake on iTunes and Stitcher. Well into season two, we have 12, 13, 14, fun episodes have happened so fast that I just literally zipped by. We've given out lots of great advice, mouthfuls of cake, and, just be sure to tune in and subscribe on iTunes and find those previous shows on Stitcher and heritageradionetwork.org. So speaking of DJing, I, DJ Cherish the Love, am Whole Foods New York City's official DJ, so come hang and eat and listen to my select tunes every first Tuesday of every month, 6 to 8 p.m., Bryant Park, New York City. This past one this week was great. There was a party behind my booth, and it was wonderful to hear laughter behind me and all these different languages swirling around me the whole time. And I hope to see you at the next one, Whole Foods DJ Night, December 5th, 6 to 8 p.m., Whole Foods Bryant Park, New York City. I am DJing for Food Network, New York Wine and Food Festival, for Chef Anne Burrell. So get your tickets Friday the 13th. October. If you want to hear me rock the crowd with a rocking all-women set list, go to www.nycwff.org. You can also find me as resident DJ at New York City's coolest, hottest new bar, lounge, restaurant in the West Village, Urban Vegan Kitchen. I'm there Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays. And I spin classics and unsigned and indie artists, so please send me your tracks, and I'll put it out into the world. Send to DJ Cherish the Love, love spelled L-U-V, at gmail.com. And lastly, more about me, through the entire month of October, you can find me up on the main billboard in Times Square under the New Year's Eve ball drop. Pfizer has made me their DJ spokesperson for surviving cancer through creativity and music. So look up if you're in Times Square. You'll see me pop up between Cardi B, Pistachios, and Palm Drinks, if I remember correctly. We are launching an app that is so wonderful and helps cancer patients get the support and inspiration they need. You'll find it in the App Store. It's called Living With. So for more info on that, follow me on Instagram at DJ Cherish the Love, love spelled L-U-V. And you might remember my voice from my previous show on Heritage Radio Network called Primary Food. It hasn't gone away. It still very much lives, so search for it on iTunes and Stitcher because there are many, many gems about life and creativity and my healing from cancer, and I will be back on the Primary Food. But since we are still in the autumn wedding season, I figured we should still keep having cake and talk about love. So listeners, you can call in live 718-497-2128. I'll say that again. 718-497-2128. And I just wanted to say that this show, Wedding Cake, is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. So please help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now, and I will love you forever. So again, call in live, 718-497-2128, to join me and today's guest, sitting next to me with a gorgeous cake in front of me, and sitting next to our station cake, Carla Cake.
She's so beautiful.
She is so beautiful, right? We're going to talk about this cake, but let's talk about you. We've got Rose McAdoo, founder of Whisk Me Away Cakes,
Hi.
Using desserts to drive global change. Yeah. That's right. Your wedding cake can have a lot more meaning and serve a purpose way beyond just pretty pictures. And that's why I have Rose here. Whisk Me Away cakes are more than simple sweet confections. They are about merging culinary traditions and crafting a shared cultural language. Rose is a dessert diplomat, using pastry to engender community and creativity. That's a wonderful quote from Anastasia Cole. How do you say her last name? Plakius, founder of Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm. What a beautiful quote.
Yeah, everything to me.
You know, visiting your website, tell us your URL.
It's whiskmeawaycakes.com.
It is so, so beautiful.
Thank you.
Just the sentiment, and we're going to get into that. Tell us about this cake that you brought.
So this cake here is called a Persian love cake.
Love.
Very
love
like, sultry and Ooh. Romantic. So it's a almond flour based cake, and it has all of the good things from the Middle East and South Asia. It's got cardamom and pistachio and almond, as I mentioned, and rose water, orange blossom, lemon. It's all of my favorite things
Yum.
In one cake. And I love it.
It smells so yummy.
Yeah.
Yummy, yummy. And why did you choose those flavors?
I just think it's, first of all, it's very warm. It kind of embodies everything about hospitality and love and affection. I just feel like it wraps everything up in one cake, and it's really unique, and it brings some more esoteric flavors that people aren't typically experiencing on a day-to-day basis. I just think it's really fun. It's something a little bit different, but still comfortable and loving enough to approach easily for people.
And I'm also understanding it was made with some Bob's Red Mill flour.
It sure was. The natural almond flour.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So good. It's so good.
So you use that often?
I actually do use their stuff quite a bit. I live in Bed-Stuy, and even in my pretty average superfood town, they have like a half an aisle. They have
Isn't
every single thing I ever need. It's insane.
I just love that. So where did you say you're located?
So I'm freelance based, and I work out of a custom cake shop. I actually work full time for Betsy Thorlifson of Nine Cakes, which is my dream job. I can't even imagine.
We're going to talk about that, too.
Yes.
What's a dream job?
What is a dream job? One that you talk about like this, I think, that you just love.
Mm-hmm.
So I work for her full time, and then she is just the kindest, most encouraging mentor I've ever known, and she lets me use her kitchen space as well.
Fantastic.
And then I do a lot of offsite events. I do all offsite events. So
now I'm going to recite a quote of yours back to you.
Oh.
Food is powerful. Desserts are my passion. We have stories to tell, and we have change to see. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So why did you create Whisk Me Away Cakes?
I have a lot of different interests, and I've always loved making desserts. I knew in seventh grade that I was going to be a pastry chef in whatever capacity that was going to look like.
In seventh grade?
Yeah.
What happened in seventh grade? I love these stories.
I have no idea.
I'm going to be a pastry chef.
I'm still the exact same person I was when I was 13, for better or worse, I think. I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And it was really hard to find how that was going to fit into something that felt very fulfilling. And so over the years, through many different experiences, I've combined all of my favorite things. And I really believe that we can build cross-cultural relationships through shared meals and personal stories.
Mm.
And I'm definitely not reinventing the wheel. There's a lot of people who inspire me who are doing the same thing in through music, through food, mm-hmm. Savory food, through dance, through any variety of creative entities. But what I found specifically through desserts is that it's this really fun, uplifting, lighthearted way to approach some really heavy conversations and some really difficult situations.
Oh, wow. So the common thread is really connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So seventh grade.
Yeah.
Did you have the name of your company way back in the seventh grade?
This is so dorky. I figured it out. I came up with the name Whisk Me Away Cakes in seventh grade, but that was only after coming up with a worse pun. So my first ever business card my mom made on Microsoft Publisher for me, we printed it on this really high gloss paper, and I hand cut them and I gave them out to like the people I babysat
it's
for.
So precious.
It's this really so precious. Precious. It's really precious. But it was called Tears of Joy, T-I-E-R-S. So bad.
I call that the charming years.
Charming is very generous of you.
The charming years is when, like, you know, you see old footage of Oprah or Ellen and they had like the bad hair and it's like, you know, like not even HD. Those are your charming years.
I was not in HD, that's for sure.
I love that. But you're talking about making changes and creating impact using desserts. So, you know, I'm thinking of someone who's going to be ordering a cake for their wedding. Mm-hmm. And the thought of having a cake that has more meaning than just for a display that day, a display of wealth or a display of God knows what, your cake can have more meaning. So how do you create impact using desserts? Like, what does that mean?
So I'm actually trying to figure out exactly what that looks like on the commercial wedding cake industry side of things. And I'm really excited about figuring that out. It's a big winter project for me, is being able to kind of find partnerships that I'm really excited about and explore wedding cakes more in that way. But in the past year or two, actually, the way that I've really found that I'm able to create impact through desserts is by assembling multi-piece dessert bars featuring desserts from around the world, specifically at-risk communities, and then putting together these really fun, creative, very individual presentations of dessert that can kind of communicate stories on their own. Or I also love to give a short presentation and just chat quickly about what that means and what that looks like in any given way.
It's a very conscientious dessert bar.
Yeah, basically. But really fun also. I don't want it to feel like a lesson or a class.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
So I saw that on your site as an apprentice at Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm, you welcomed many asylum seekers during the summer of 2015. I love what you wrote on the site, that once initial curiosities were out of the way, meaning name, country of origin, etc., that the conversation immediately jumped to food. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have to eat. We all have food stories.
Exactly.
So what happened in 2015?
At the farm, do you mean? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started my apprenticeship with Brooklyn Grange that summer and specifically requested to work on Wednesdays because that's the day that the farm hosts asylum seekers through an organization called RIF, which is Refugee and Immigrant Fund, New York City. Check them out. They are some of closest friends. It's RIF, RIFNYC.org.
Okay.
A super small organization headed up by two people, predominantly two women. Hey. And they're just doing amazing work and helping resettlement in various capacities and helping to find jobs and provide legal counsel and host food drives. They're doing a lot of different work. But it's small enough where people are able to make these really strong connections within this one organization. It's not so big that you kind of lose that. And so they have a partnership with Brooklyn Grange, and once a week we host refugees and asylum seekers on the farm, and they'll harvest or whatever tasks need to be done with us once a week. And so I made one of the best friends of my entire life at the compost pile. And He was
not quite the water cooler, but it is.
That's my water cooler. I would like to start a dating app where you just meet people around a compost pile.
What is that app going to be called? Compost.
I don't know. I'm working on it. If anyone has any ideas, let me know.
Best friend from the compost pile. What happened?
So he was he just arrived here as an asylum seeker from Rwanda, and his English was really rough. He was obviously going through a lot. So it was by no means like a fun, easygoing conversation. It was pretty forced and slow and a little difficult. And the way that we were able to connect that day was by talking about food, as you mentioned from my website. And his whole thing was, I only know how to make potatoes. That's it. Nothing else. Only potatoes. Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on, you have to know how to make something other than potatoes. No, I do not. I can only boil potatoes. That's it. And beans, potatoes and beans. And so I had him for Thanksgiving at our house that fall and every year since. I mean, he's really one of my closest friends. And so for Thanksgiving that year, we made potatoes three ways. And we just gave him this huge plate of potatoes.
He's like, I can handle this.
Blue potatoes and classic American mash. It was really, it was really fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Just to get some clarity, asylum seeker, what does that mean exactly?
So asylum seekers are people who've typically had successful jobs in their home country. Typically, I've found that it's through jobs, but they have visas that are that allow them to travel somewhere. And when they arrive here, they're able to come in legally on a visa, but then they need to apply for asylum. So instead of being placed in a refugee camp in their home country and waiting for America to invite them, they kind of just show up, and then we help them to gain safety here in the States. And it's a at least 2 to 3 year process typically for people to get an interview from the government.
Oh, to just get the interview.
It's ridiculous.
Even.
Yeah.
Like wow.
My close friend is still waiting years later.
Wow, that's the real talk right there.
It's really, there's a lot. There's a lot there.
And you help to tell their stories through dessert.
I try to, yeah. Yeah.
So what is your creative process like once you hear someone's life experiences and you just get inspired to make food, as I saw on that Vimeo? You got to check out this site, because that whole like service of sweet things that from all around the, you know, just tell us about that, your creative process, how you get inspired and what you create, the sweets you create and why.
So the short of it, the day to day is that I'm covered in butter and sugar and flour and scooping those things into various bowls and assembling delicious products from very few ingredients. On the rare instances that I get out of the kitchen, very rare, that creative process is a lot of talking to people, a lot of asking questions and sharing dessert stories or finding out what their favorite flavors are, maybe what their family used to cook together, or a favorite dessert that they've had when they've traveled, or something that they've never tried but have always wanted to. Whatever questions kind of get the juices flowing. I have a notebook with just kind of a running list of things I want to either try or experiment with or attempt to replicate, whatever that looks like, or regions of the world that I feel that I want to learn more about. Because I think with anything, I'm sure you can relate to this, but the deeper you get into something, the more you realize you don't know anything, because it's just this black hole of inspiration and
It's
overwhelming.
I can tell you all about that from just my music collection.
I'm sure.
It's like the more music I actually end up having, the more I realize I don't know.
Like, I don't know anything about
it. It's just so huge. There's just so much, and it's so beautiful. And you're telling, you know, people's stories, and they have so much rich background, and you're giving them this platform in a warm, delicious space. Like, that must be so rewarding.
It's really special. One of my friends actually last night said something that really caught me off guard. She said that she asked if dessert signify abundance. I said, well, I guess it does, because even if you have nothing, you're still going to eat. Mm-hmm. Even if your life is, I mean, the lowest it's ever been, you still have to make food. You have to eat. You have to sustain your life. But if you're then able to use whatever ingredients you have and scrape together a dessert, I think that that shows you have hope for something. Like that's it's unnecessary, and so that therefore it's really special.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's kind of, I didn't really think about dessert being that way, but yeah, it is very special, actually.
It is, yeah. And I don't understand why it's special specifically. And so I've been asking people, and they've all had really insightful things to say.
Well, you traveled a bunch and have seen how people handle desserts. You were recently in East Africa.
I was.
Solo.
Yeah.
Okay, so you must have learned a little something-something.
I learned a lot of something-somethings. Some really big ones and then a lot of smaller ones.
What did you experience and how does that affect the way you make desserts and cakes now?
Oh, that's such a big, exciting question. First of all, the biggest thing I learned, well, I also kind of knew before I went, but I kind of decided, well, if I can pull off making desserts in East Africa, a culture that doesn't typically really have any, then I can definitely take this on the road and do it a lot of other places. Like, this is going to be the hardest foot in the door for desserts. And as you do, you mentally prepare for that. You're like, oh, it's going to be fine. And then I got there and I asked people what their favorite desserts were. And I was greeted with the question of like, well, what do you mean a dessert?
Oh.
And I had to try to identify what a dessert was. And it was really hard. It was really hard. And I said, oh, it's like a sweet thing that typically like surrounds celebration or joy, which was kind of, those were the two pieces I could think of that mattered. And what that trip culminated in after 6.5 weeks was...
6.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Quite a few different countries. And the kind of end piece that I landed on was fried dough by any other name. that's really just all I ate was fried dough for 7 weeks.
Oh my God.
Not great for the cake bod, but it was really delicious. So there was all this chapati and mandazi, which is like a Kenyan version of a donut, essentially. And there was very light, fluffy versions that were plain. And then there was much heavier, denser, kind of like big rocks that were the size of your fist that were just fried dough that kids would grab on their way home from school for a couple of cents.
Were they sweet? They were not always sweet.
No, not always sweet. Depending. Yeah, really. It really ran the gamut. But the most exciting dessert story, I think, of the trip was that I wasn't planning on going to Zanzibar. I was on that whole, oh, it's touristy. Wow. I'm going to ignore it.
Uh-huh.
How ridiculous.
What happened?
So I ended up going and blind emailed this really amazing hotel and restaurant and asked if I could come for dinner. And they ended up setting up a meeting with their pastry chefs for the kind of ran both restaurants. And so I, after dining there the night before, I got to sit with them the next morning and I had a bunch of interview questions planned. Like I was very structured. I was kind of nervous. And I sat down and they said, oh, instead of an interview, could we just like brainstorm a new menu together?
Oh,
and I was like, neat. Oh, cool.
That's
yeah,
cool.
We can definitely
okay.
do yeah. that. And so we started talking about all of these different ingredients and what was available there. Zanzibar is an island known for it's spice farming. And so they just, I mean, talk about the spices in this Persian love cake.
Yeah.
It's like everything fresh on the island. And so what he said was, I love cooking here because you can trick people into thinking that they're in all of these different places. Like we're in the middle of Africa, but we can trick people into thinking that they're in India or in whatever region, just by the spices and the foods that we put out. And he said, if you're a good taster, you can see the whole world by your tongue.
Wow.
Which I just thought was so impactful.
Oh, that's beautiful. I never thought about it like that.
I know.
I mean, we have shared spices, but there are definitely spices and flavors that are unique to certain regions.
For sure.
Oh, that's really cool. I love that.
Yeah.
And is that that exploration, is that part of your driving force behind Whisk Me Away Cakes? Just...
Yeah, it really has become that. We've started a sort of recipe share back and forth via email with those two chefs specifically, which has been really fun. And then I also lived with the Maasai tribe in Kenya for a week.
Wow.
Which was the experience of a lifetime. And I can't wait to go back. I'm really, I loved it.
What was that like? To be with, you know, the tribe and to be immersed in there. How is language?
Strangely comfortable. Language was the hardest part of that.
Okay.
There was the only other girl present for that entire week was this girl about my age. The Maasai tribe doesn't keep track of ages, so no one knows how old they are.
Awesome.
Which I think is great.
It's kind of awesome.
It's incredibly awesome, yeah. But I think she was about my age, and she had done a couple years of schooling in the city center, and so she was able to translate for me a bit. But that was also pretty rough and pretty forced. And but it just felt... I think I took a few hours and then like that first night to fully adjust, and then I cried when I left, which
and
was
you
so
connected over food, which is, well, it's not embarrassing, it's beautiful, it's human. I love that.
Yeah, it was a really, really powerful week. And Parkimaso Kaea was the one person in that tribe who had also studied in Nairobi for a couple of weeks here and there, and so he worked at a couple of the tourist camps as a cook. And he and I spoke through Ntashua translating, and this actually, I was so focused on not coming on that trip or to that region with an agenda. Like, I did not want to...
Right, right.
Hi, I'm Rose. I'm a pastry chef in New York, and I'm here to teach you everything. Like, that was... I was so terrified of being that person.
Right, right.
And what I ended up doing was that by being so focused on not pushing my knowledge or background or anything, I actually didn't even share it in the way that I typically would.
Oh, so and you were in the moment, basically.
Yeah, but what actually happened was that the chef, Parkimaso Kaea, he actually asked at the end if I had WhatsApp, and if when he went to town, we could exchange recipes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that he could learn more about my culture because he had just shared his with me for a week.
Wow. So in theory, you know, I can have you make a cake for me that comes from a recipe from someone from your trip.
In theory.
Just, yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fried dough from that one.
As long as it's sweet. Chef. No, are there others in this space whose work you admire? You look up to?
Yeah.
This is new for me. This is this whole
what's that?
The concept of like the food and the, you know, the storytelling in this way. Is just so beautiful.
Thank you.
I want to know more about this.
It's definitely still a work in process. And I've, my biggest inspiration this year for food and flavor has been this man named Gary. He runs a pastry shop on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. It's called Oriental Pastry and Grocery. And if you stand facing Kalustians, Sahadis. I also love Kalustians, but Sahadis. And then you just turn directly around. His shop is right there.
Okay,
and
that's a great little region.
Yeah, it's
by the way.
Best. Oh my God. I stumbled in there one day because Sahadi's was packed and I needed just some semolina flour. And he and I just struck up this really sweet little friendship. And I go like every single, I bought my cardamom and the rose petals from him. I go before any event that I have and I stock up on all my spices and my grains. And he, every time I walk in, oh, Rosie, how are you doing? He's this man from Damascus, Syria, and he makes amazing pastries in the back of his shop. And you go in, and he'll just cut you a hunk of any dessert that he has because he just wants you to try it, and he wants to share with you.
We're going to dive into this cake during the break. But before we go to break, I want to ask, are there any fun facts you could share for people who are curious about unique dessert traditions and histories?
Yeah. I think my favorite is actually surrounding nutmeg, because back in the day, nutmeg obviously was shipped on massive boats all over the world as part of the spice trade, and so many people who worked on the docks in these port cities, they were actually forced to wear pocketless jumpers, and they were searched after they were done with their shifts each day, because if they were able to sneak even one bulb of nutmeg off of shift, that would support their families for the rest of their lives.
What?
And we just
wild
buy it for a dollar. I mean, it's like such a useless, it's not useless, it's so useful. It's such a thoughtless thing to us. And these spices used to be so valuable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I did not expect you to say that. That's really wild. I love that. So we're going to take a little break. We're sitting here with Rose. We're understanding and savoring our differences, celebrating that through food. We're going to cut into some cake while you hear from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Oh my gosh. Sorry.
I didn't realize we were coming back so fast.
Okay. I'm still like, you know.
Am I interrupting?
Yes, you're interrupting. We're eating this cake. This cake is amazing.
Actually, if you could fill time so I could eat more cake, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll speak slower. Okay, so again, remind me what's in this, because it's all the flavors are in this.
All of the flavors.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of a melting pot of things. So almond flour is the base. Bob's Red Mill. Cardamom, nutmeg, as mentioned. Rose water, a little bit of orange blossom water.
Does this cake give you FOMO? It should.
It's so delicious.
Oh my gosh, so yummy. We are storytelling through dessert. It really sounds like a perfect plan to me, as we have Brooklyn's own Whisk Me Away's cake, Rose McAdoo. I'm trying to swallow the cake. Your mission is to tell stories through cake and to use desserts to drive global change. And I think that's just so powerful. Your cakes, Rose, are rich in flavor and history. And your recent trip through East Africa taught you a lot that you can share with us. So tell us more about this process and why it's so important. Why you love baking cakes. Making sweets.
Making sweets.
Feeding the people all the things.
All the things. I just really believe that people need to use all of their weird passions and talents to do something. I don't even care what it is. Say something, do something. And lately, I mean, there's obviously been a lot happening in the world, and I've seen a lot of people on social media, people that I really admire and follow and kind of model my business after in a lot of ways, kind of shy away from saying anything. And I just think that that's a little bit sad. I'm not saying that you need to make some big, bold, polarizing statement, but I do think that you can use your talents to kind of send a message or to create good and put that in the world and connect to people. And it should just be a total mosh pit of all of the things that you love and who you are, because then it's authentic and it's true and people sign on to that and they're excited about it.
What would you say is your message with the work that you do in food?
I want to start conversations. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people want an opportunity to talk to people who are very different from them, but don't know how. And that taking that first step is very scary. I mean, what would you talk about? You have nothing in common. It's such a huge difference. We barely speak the same language. They're from a place I've never even heard of. Whatever it is, if you're eating a cake together. I mean, that's a pretty easy space to be like, at very least.
How did you get over that fear of speaking to people in all the countries that you visited? You just like walked up to them and said, food?
I don't know.
Is that what happened?
I don't know what happened, actually. people thought I was very strange at first. I will say that.
She's so friendly, the Americans.
Very interesting. She's alone. This is very weird. I popped over to the DR of Congo very briefly for a few days to do this volcano summit hike because I wanted to speak to our porter. And he actually trained as a classic chef in one of Virunga National Park's resorts. And he trained under someone who had been sent to Europe to train. And so we ended up, I mean, my French is bad. I took French a long time ago.
Can't be worse than mine.
No, it's just not, it's not good. It's not good. But we ended up, I mean, once you have something, you know, kind of to base the context around, I think it's a little easier too. But on our entire descent, that following morning, like we had a couple hours hike back down the mountain, and we just talked for 2 hours about cakes and his, like, he had just been gotten married actually 6 months before. And I was asking him if wedding cakes are common practice there, which I assumed the answer was no, because that wasn't common practice anywhere in that region, except in city centers. He said, oh, yes, people love cake for their weddings.
And I was okay.
Dumbfounded. I was like, oh, my God, this is so exciting. And he's like, yes, for me, I just got married. I said, I know, congratulations. And he said, we had the biggest celebration, everyone that we love. And African weddings are huge. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of people. And I said, well, what did you have to celebrate? Oh, chicken.
What?
I was like, oh, the poulet? Like, what? Chicken? I was like, yes, yes. My favorite for celebrating. And so there definitely was some mix, some cross signals
there. Yeah,
that's,
that's really funny.
But he ended up sending me a recipe for his favorite mango cake like 2 weeks ago, actually. I haven't even made it yet. I'm really excited.
You have to make that and let me know. Yeah. Because I'm going to come and taste that. Yeah. And where is that from again? The Congo?
Yeah, that's from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Oh, how wonderful.
But it's European because he was trained under a European chef. But
it's got his magic on it, though.
Yeah, so much magic.
So you believe, according to your site, and I love these blurbs, that building cross-cultural relationships through shared meals and personal stories will directly eliminate the prejudices and dangerous misunderstandings that are currently threatening our world. What a powerful statement.
Thank you.
Tell us about that, like that shared meals and personal stories, like how is that the salve and the solution?
People listen when there's cake involved.
That's right.
It's kind of crazy.
I made a lot of friends because of this show.
Exactly. Cake. People want it. But, I mean, it. You know, in New York, the first thing anyone asks, often before your name even, oh, so what do you do? Mm-hmm. That's the question. Mm-hmm. And when I say, oh, I'm a cake decorator, I make wedding cakes, their eyes get huge. They get so excited. They're instantly engaged and an immediate audience. And it makes me actually very uncomfortable, or it did make me very uncomfortable. And now I'm like, yes, like this is something, like I have an immediate audience. I have people who are very engaged in my product, even at face value. So mm-hmm. then if you're using that to say something or to give people a chance to connect, that's a really, I found it's a really powerful way to do it. And I've realized that cakes often are able to communicate people's stories when those people aren't given the opportunity to tell their own.
That is so true. And you say that you strongly believe that the more of us who choose to take a bold step in any direction, the smaller our separation from all the global issues become. And cake being that binder is such a great, it's such a great tool.
Yeah.
Sweets and food in general.
And there are so many amazing like people who are trying to do this through food. It's really inspiring. I just think it's really fun to do it through desserts, but there are so many people, like Julia Tershin's book coming out, Feed the Resistance.
Of course.
That I'm really excited about. Emma's Torch, Carrie Brody has founded a cafe where she's training refugees to work in really fine dining establishments around New York City. Like people are getting involved and doing things. I just like cake, so that's my medium.
Do you have any events coming up that people can attend?
I actually just wrapped up a massive season. I'm exhausted.
Okay, so when do you plan to start that up? Because we need to know about that.
Oh, it's all happening. I'm getting my calendar kind of back in the books. But I have a couple weddings booked this fall. Actually, Anastasia's at the Farm is one of them. So we're going to make some farm-inspired desserts, which I'd love to talk to you about more in the future.
Yes, we will. Because that sounds more savory.
Yeah.
Savory and sweet. Okay, we'll bring you back for that.
Yeah.
And how can people connect with you? Do you do workshops or do you do educational?
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of building out a workshop program that I'm excited to spread throughout New York. Some more to come on that for sure. Follow me on Instagram, definitely, to kind of keep abreast of events and workshops and opportunities to engage with people. I'm in the process of kind of getting some big stuff going this winter, which I'm excited about.
That's so fantastic. Yeah. So if people want to follow you, where can they go on Instagram, social media, Facebook?
So all of the things, it's at Whisk Me Away Cakes, plural. And my website is www.whiskmeawaycakes.com. But follow me on Instagram. That's definitely been my favorite mode of conversation.
So if you had one piece of beautiful history or a gem that came from your trip recently, what could you share with us? What comes to mind?
My favorite moment potentially of the entire trip, just because it was very formative. It was like my first couple days there, was interviewing Parkimasa Kaea, the chef in the Maasai. And we connected over the fact that neither of us were able to afford pastry school. And so we had just trained under other people. And we both got very excited about that we had this kind of shared training background. And I told him, in America, it's actually very respected to train under chefs instead of going to school. Not that one is better than the other, but it's definitely a really engaging way to learn. And he was really excited about that. And we were going on. And he pointed at himself and pointed at me, and he smiled and he said, "Same, same."
Oh,
yeah. And I was like, "Yes, yes, same, same." Like, that's the whole point. And however we communicate that is, that's great. So I want to do that through dessert. I want to do that through food. I want to do that through cake and sweets and stories. But you're doing it through music. I mean, just do it. Whatever you love, just do that.
Yeah. And support Rose, freelance woman in business.
Thank you.
So any challenges being woman in business in the cake world in this sector?
I think that women naturally are a little more hesitant to give ourselves the authority to go into these big things head first.
You went in head first.
I'm speaking from experience. I definitely find that I doubt myself quite often, and it's really easy to turn that part of your brain on, and I'm training it to shut off. I'm like, stop it. You have some things to do. Like, get out of your head.
You managed to turn it off and take a solo trip for 6.5 weeks.
Thanks. Yeah.
So how do you, what would you say to inspire another woman to do a solo trip?
People were actually so much more open to me as a solo female traveler. Like, people wanted to help me. They wanted to protect me. They checked in on me. They watched me. I actually felt much safer traveling by myself than when I've traveled with now ex-boyfriends or groups of friends. Like, you are just given the space to be who you are, and people want to engage with that, and they want to know why you're traveling alone. And it gave me a bigger opportunity to connect with people than I've ever had traveling before.
Sounds like you found a lot of yourself on these trips.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rose, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing this amazing cake. What did you call it again?
It's called Persian love cake.
Persian love cake.
It's so scandalous, I think.
It's super scandalous. We're going to eat the rest of the cake.
All of it. It's all happening. And
we're going to close out with this season's theme song called The One by Jordan Knox. You can download the new Jordan Knox app to stay in the know about everything she's doing on Android and iOS, jordanknox.com. Twitter, Jordan Knox of 2 X's. So this show, Wedding Cake, is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep Heritage Radio Network alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now. So thank you, and come back for another slice of Wedding Cake on Heritage Radio Network.
Is it a dream that I'm here with you? I've been wanting this since I could think. That old love's done, it's in my rear view. A love like this makes life make sense. Can we be happy till life's complete? A love that never ceases in time. A love that only true love can find. My heart, my baby, my keys, my everything. My nothing even matters. I'm coming home to my queen. Tears in my eyes as you walk down the aisle. A love that won't hide. A love that makes the room shut up. Stop. Yo.
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.